Hey devs, you're tuning into the debug log number 105. And it's another good one. This one is a brand spanking new interview with two special guests, Roz von Luda and Andrea Bobic. We are talking to you about technical art. What is technical art? What do technical artists do? What's the career path look like for a technical artist? All that and more in this episode. A lot of good information as it relates to technical art. This is the very first time we've had a talk about technical art. I think we've been beating around the bush with it, but we're finally here. We finally got it, and we've got two special guests to talk about it who've been doing technical art for quite a long time. So without further ado, this is the Debug Log, episode 105. You're listening to The Debug Log, a podcast about game development. My name is Obino Parra, and I'm here all by myself. Well, sans any co-host, at least, but I do have two special guests with me today, and we're talking all about technical art and what technical art is, what technical artists do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're kind of just going to jump into all of that and more on the show. So first off, let me introduce my wonderful guests. We have Andrea Bobic and Roz von Luda, two very esteemed technical artists. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Hey.
Sweet. And these are, for sure, these are two brand new faces of the show. We've never had them on the show, and I hope they don't screw up. I'm just kidding. It's going to be great. It's a great show ahead. They are plenty of experienced technical artists, and we're just going to jump right into that. But before we do, what I like to do before I interview anybody is kind of get to know a little bit more about who this person is. I know all about you guys. I've kind of Facebook stalked you. I know all about your background and experience. But could you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself, how you got into games, what makes you so excited about being a game developer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's start with you, Andrea.
Sure. So I feel like I've kind of got this like sort of crazy straw path through my career. So I originally, like every, you know, Asian parent, Asian, I have a crazy family life as well, but I come from sort of this Jewish household, but I'm Korean. So everybody wants to be pre-med or a lawyer or pre-law. So that's, you know, what I was going for in college. And then I had a friend in one of my courses recommend going into animation because I had actually settled in sort of a mechanical engineering background. And I had also pursued a lot of like art courses and art related activities. And so they had suggested that animation and sort of the gaming industry would be a good marriage of those two interests. And so I went back to school to my parents' chagrin, because just meant more loans. But I went back to school for game development, went to a terrible school, had terrible experience, but ended up going out to the West Coast just because that was where a lot of the jobs are at. And then started as an intern in this Dungeons and Dragons RPG game company. Started out as an animation intern, worked my way up through the ranks. And then after a while, I was like, oh, actually, I like learning about how things are put together in addition to just like making content. And so I actually ended up moving into mobile games because that was sort of the new craze. And it was sort of picking up before you just had these kind of like feature phones with really simple pixel art type games, which are cool and fun. But as when people were getting into smartphones and the games are getting more complex and the art was getting more complex and getting content to perform smoothly on the devices was a technical challenge. That's where it was getting interesting. So then I moved into sort of the tech art, tech animation side of things, and it's kind of where I've been sort of heading ever since, because there's so much to learn.
Gotcha. Cool. So actually, a quick question on that. You said someone like introduced you to the idea of maybe getting into the game industry. But before that, were you interested in like playing games at all, or is just like, meh?
It was on and off. So okay. I did not play games when I was a kid. And then when I got to college, I had a boyfriend who really liked playing like fighting games. And they were into, you know, like the Street Fighter, Soul Calibur, actually. Right. And I was more into sort of like the animation and the art. And that's when I started. I think my very first game that I really, really loved was Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Classic.
Yeah. So then after that, I was like, oh, there's something about, you know, storytelling and getting a kind of immersed into the world. That's really cool.
All right. Cool. Sounds good. How about you, Roz? Tell us not your life story, because that might be a while, but just like, how did you get into game development? What got you excited about technical art in particular? And, you know, got you excited about playing games?
I mean, I do have to start with my life story, because I think it ties in very well. In many ways, it's similar to Andrea's in terms of the career progression and kind of starting with art. So it started in high school, where I had the, you know, symbiotic relationship between the fact that I was very interested in the art side of things, but I also very interested in the sciences. And ultimately, that kind of shaped my interest in technical art and how I found, you know, problem solving, but also figuring out how to get the art to look better, kind of the visual targets of games, right? And so to go back to the beginning, it started in high school, right? That interest in video games was always, unlike Andrea, I've been playing games ever since I was little. But in Romania, there was no real opportunity to kind of follow this path. And because of my passion for drawing, I was planning on going to architecture school. And that plan, about a month before going to college, my mom won the diversity visa lottery for the United States. So that kind of threw our life, you know, life plans away. And we had the chance to move to America. And for me, that meant that I had a whole, you know, slew of opportunities now to pick from. So I took some time and really thought about what I wanted to do and picked a college that allowed me to go into game art. Unfortunately, similar to Andrea, I did not have the best experience in college either in terms of what I felt like the school was offering me. But I made a lot of good friends and learned a lot from my teachers there. And I ultimately, you know, it was worth it. If I had to have to put a yes or no on it, I don't regret going there. But it was a very pricey endeavor, as most people going to college in America can tell you. So from there, you know, I started doing a lot of internships. I went through a couple of small indie game studios, some educational apps, making content, started as an artist, and ended up getting an internship at LucasArts, which really pushed my resume on more desks, I felt like. It just so happened that after that internship, I was getting a lot more attention on LinkedIn, and a lot more recruiters were reaching out to me. And I realized it was mostly because of the position at that studio than my actual skills that they couldn't gather, you know, from a 5-minute LinkedIn browsing. But after that, I managed to get a, you know, full-time position doing 3D art. And from there, just because I started getting bored of doing the same thing over and over again, I had coworkers and friends, engineers, who helped me kind of move into technical art and start automating the tasks that I was doing. And at first, you know, I was very kind of repeating these 17 tasks into a single script, and then it moved on to more complex things, and started helping my animator friends with rigging and rigging automation. And then, you know, a few years later, I was working as a full-time technical artist, kind of doing a slew of things.
Gotcha. Cool. And that kind of that description of your last few, not last few, but the kind of tail end of your story kind of segues into kind of what we're talking about today, is kind of what is technical art and or what does a technical artist do? And that's kind of the question I kind of want to pose to both of you about, like, personally, or I guess in your own words, how would you describe technical art or what a technical artist's role is? Roz, do you want to start us off and just in your own words, with your own definition of technical art history, maybe?
Sure. I think it's a very hard thing to really pinpoint. Technical art in entertainment and games specifically, at least, is a very large umbrella. You have people doing anything from integration of content in a engine or, you know, for a feature production or whatnot, to pipeline engineers, if you have to, you know, describe them in a different way, that focus more on the programming side and do a lot of tasks that have to do with engineering of tasks, right? So everything in between, and that can mean customization of, you know, proprietary tools, or dealing with creating high bars for art, and whether that's, you know, making shaders or making setting up examples for modularity of assets. Usually, I think the best way to describe it is someone who has an equal interest in the way that a game works and how the every single asset gets rendered on the screen, and also someone who cares just as much about the visual look and the artistic quality and merit of that game.
Gotcha. Cool. So yeah, I like that definition, is like someone who has an equal, you know, interest in multiple aspects of game development. Andrea, how about you? Do you feel like you're kind of aligned with that definition, or do you have your own specific definition of what technical art is?
I think that I would agree to a lot of things that Raz was saying, especially the fact that tech art is such a varied definition depending on which studio you're at, what part of the pipeline you're in, and then what sort of industry, whether it's like games or film, or even, you know, like automotive or industrial design. I do think that you have to have an interest in art. Like, you don't have to be the most consummate artist or animator, but you have to know how it's done and appreciate the time and the effort in it. But you should definitely have an interest in how that stuff is implemented in whatever final platform it needs to be in. And then also you're kind of facilitating the artist's workflow. Mm-hmm. So you should definitely think of yourself as kind of, I don't want to say a service person, but somebody who definitely is going to do a lot of communication amongst artists and engineers.
Okay.
And so, I think that also needs to be driven by a lot of curiosity, because I think one of the challenges that almost every single technical artist that I know encounters on a daily basis is that a lot of times you have to look ahead and see what the rest of the industry develops and be able to understand and ingest all the information, but then also communicate it to both, or not just artists and engineers, but communicate it to business people and people who otherwise don't have a technical or an artistic understanding of the product that's being built. So, you know, to justify everything from like choosing a new software to build 3D assets, or because it's faster and better, and in the end, it will save money, or, you know, a different approach or whatnot.
Right. So yeah, your descriptions of a technical artist sounds like they're the glue that holds everything together. But Quick question. You guys both brought up, well, Roz said some, quote unquote, the industry, and Andrea kind of alluded to there being multiple industries that technical artists are kind of a part of. And I remember, if I remember correctly, kind of technical art was kind of birthed in this, the game industry, like their role kind of spawned from the game industry. But Andrea kind of mentioned that there is some spread and that role has kind of seeped into multiple different industries, whether it's, you know, industrial or film. Do you feel like, or well, I guess Roz, for you, do you feel like there is a kind of a transition from technical arts being a quote unquote game industry only role to something that's kind of been, is now pervasive across industries?
I mean, I don't think there needs to be a delimitation, if you will, between the two. In the end, each game studio and each film studio or animation studio or anything outside the industry has their own titles for the category of people they're trying to hire or train or use in their projects. And even inside the game industry, maybe even inside the same studio, the understanding of what someone wants out of a technical artist can vary a lot from team to team. Because you can say that the technical artist, you can have the expectation that a technical artist is someone who does a lot of rigging automation and a lot of mechanical animation, procedural integration in the engine or whatnot. And then you can also have the expectation that a technical artist does procedural crowd simulation or cloth simulation. And those two may or may not be found in the same person.
Right.
But they're both technical artists.
Gotcha. So a further question, I guess I'll dive a little deeper. So is that variation of what the role entails for a technical artist, is that based on the fact that technical artists are, you know, quote unquote, the glue? They are doing everything, almost everything.
I think part of it is that the product that you're making is so varied too.
Right.
Okay. Depend, you know, like if you are making something that's very heavy on like 2D or UI or something that's very animation heavy versus physics heavy, you may be asked to do different types of tasks. Like rigging may not come into play as much as like shader writing or even not so much as making stuff that would go in the game, but making artist tools that help with like pipeline stuff.
Right.
So it is such a huge swing of responsibilities and right. expectations.
I think at the same time, because it, you know, there's such a high expectation of being comfortable in a lot of areas. There's also, as the technical artist, you have this need to fill in a lot of voids, and that pushes you into becoming more proficient at something, right? And usually that's driven by the project needs. But at the same time, a lot of the technical artists I know, and I'd be curious to know what Andrea thinks here, a lot of the technical artists I know have, in many ways, advanced knowledge of some areas and then a lot of superficial knowledge of a lot of other areas to be able to achieve, you know, a breadth, a spread of knowledge.
Right.
I've experienced different scenarios depending on like the size of the project and the size of the team. So definitely for like a larger project, which has many different sort of departments and feature sets, there's specialization. But for my last project, I was solely just focused on animation pipeline. But on smaller, kind of like startup-y studios, you definitely will have an equal footing in many different areas. But it is definitely, especially in the role that we're at now at Unity, you can't know everything. There's just so much that's involved in all our vertical.
Right. Yeah. So it was kind of baffles me to an extent about the breadth of knowledge that is expected from a technical artist, as opposed to maybe the breadth of knowledge expected from a quote unquote software engineer, or even a backend engineer or a cloud server engineer. There's a lot of knowledge required or expected from a technical artist. I'm curious why they are not the highest paid position in the industry.
That's a loaded question.
it was more rhetorical, but if you have a response, I'm open to hear it. I'm eager to hear it.
Well, I think if that's, because of, that spread of knowledge, if you have, I know technical artists who have a passion, who started, being generalists, if you will, and then have a passion for a specific thing. Often that's graphics or animation or something else. And then they usually go further into that area and become expert engineers of that area. And that's the transition out, if you will. So I've seen, the transition into technical art, but also transition out of technical art, and then focus exclusively on a single unit of, the game engine or the film production or whatever other industry. Right. And then that's usually in that specialization, I think, lies the higher salary as well. But I don't know if that's the actual
answer. I would also posit that because it's such a fuzzy area, part of it is ignorance on hiring managers who may not understand.
Just like a low-key call out to your employee, your manager.
You managers out there that, in general, things that are related to the art side of things don't get as much appreciation as engineering. And not that all that's the case everywhere, but there's a lot of cases that I've seen of underappreciation of exactly what the tech artist does and how they make your product look good.
Right. So
sorry, I was going to say that I definitely agree with that, because I think there's a lot of uncertainty, just like we were talking about earlier, with the fact that there's so many jobs that fit in this umbrella of technical art. It is very difficult to generalize and suggest what the worth of the contribution of a single technical artist is, especially when they have different levels of expertise in different areas of development. So I think that's what makes it very difficult. The other thing is that it's a very new, even in the sense of game development, it's a rather new specialization that's only recently been more widespread, if you will. I mean, technical artists have always existed. I just don't think they've wore the name of technical artist for, longer than the past 10, maybe 15 years. This divide that was between artists and engineers is now filled by this role that is kind of undefined. So I think that's where a lot of uncertainty comes from.
Right. That makes sense. You guys all touched on a couple of things that we're going to get into later in the episode, as far as like career growth and kind of the trajectory of a technical artist. Well, at one point, I kind of was thinking to myself when I was writing this outline, is like whether technical artists are a quote unquote dying breed, or would you say it's the opposite, and they're a role in a class of engineers / artists that is growing across industries.
Okay,
Andrea, you want to kick that off first?
I would say the opposite, that it is something that it's picking up, and as Raz mentioned, it was a relatively unknown position and sometimes considered a luxury, but I feel like with a lot more tools out there for artists, you're going to see a lot more artists becoming more technical to be sort of like, especially becoming this one man studio or one person production team.
Right.
I think you're going to see a lot more people who were content creators and now are moving into a more technical role.
Actually, to grab on that before you jump on, Raza, quick question for clarification. Do you feel, Andrea, that because I actually noticed this as well as in my last studio, is that a lot of our artists were becoming a lot more technically inclined and in almost even engineering focused, right? You know, writing their own shaders, managing the technical side of their art almost more than the technical artist, but like kind of almost coaching with, you know, walking alongside the technical artist and implementing these workflows and these pipelines. Do you feel like there's a risk there, a quote unquote risk to, you know, traditional tech artists? Not traditional because it's a very new field, but you know what I mean?
There's always going to be the artist that doesn't want anything to do with technical. They just want to be heads down in whatever like art tool that they're working on and just throw it over the fence and let the technical artist deal with actually, you know, getting it in the game or getting it on screen. I feel like there's definitely room for everyone at the moment. So I feel like the more artists become educated, it is for the best.
Okay. Sorry, Ross. Yeah,
I have to agree. I think there's always going to be more room for more creators. And I do believe that there's a certain amount of artists that will never try to do anything technical because they don't want to, and they have a distaste for trying to achieve anything that requires more than their creativity to, you know, to create any content. And I think, you know, there's a place for that. And there's also, due to the fact that, you know, software has changed a lot of our lives in the last 10 years alone. And there's now, especially for games, I'm not sure how much it applies to other industries, but especially for games, there's so many content creation tools that using the technology that exists now allow you to create content hundreds of times faster than it was even 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm talking, you know, about procedural texturing, or procedural animation. And that still requires the creative input of someone who has that art background. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't require as much of their time. So, you know, in my opinion, one of two things happen there. Either the artist becomes more technical and embraces that and creates more of that content to basically have larger and larger productions. Mm-hmm. Or they continue creating more unique niche content that does still require a lot of handholding and finessing and paintbrushing.
Right. And to your point, though, about the advance and the maturation of technology platforms and applications at their core, like even things like, you know, shader graphs and visual scripting, things that are making it easier for content creators to, you know, kind of not eliminate, but kind of not require so much attention from, you know, more of the engineering focus, you know, side of the team or side of development. Do you feel like that, you know, that kind of gap is being closed and maybe pushing being a quote unquote risk for technical artists as, you know, technology advances and becomes easier and more, I guess, there's like a lower learning curve to getting into what you need to do as an artist.
Right. I think there's kind of a push on both ends. So there's more artists coming in and they're becoming more adept at using the tools. I think just from the point of view, like the more artists there are that can get their stuff being interactive or in whatever medium they want, the more exposure there is to other people's stories and perspectives. And I think that's great. But I also think audiences and players are getting more sophisticated. So you're going to get a lot more, you're going to get other technical challenges and hurdles and more complicated projects, which are always going to require specialties. And I think that's always going to open more doors for technical artists to move in different spaces.
Right. So yeah. To that point, go ahead, Ross.
Oh, no, sorry. I was going to say I have nothing to add because I think Andrea nailed it.
Yeah, that was really good. And just to, I guess, in summary, we're kind of saying that, you know, technical artists are kind of the unicorns of game development. They do a lot. They have a broad range of skills. Or I guess maybe this was my point, was kind of like, and almost to what I was mentioning earlier about career growth, but is the path for a technical artist always leaning towards specialization, always becoming a specialist or kind of adept at, you know, a particular piece of a product in the industry, like shader focused, or, you know, dealing with CAD models focused, or, you know, pipeline focused, which you haven't really touched on, but we'll get to that.
I don't know.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you.
Yeah, Ross.
All right. I'll go first. I don't think so. I don't think there's a defined path. And I know a lot of studios try to create that. And I both embrace it and kind of am afraid of it. I don't think there's a specific need for a very unique path to be crafted for a technical artist, because I don't think that technical artists are all the same. So it would be very hard to justify forcing someone into specialization when that's not their intent, right? I think, you know, sometimes technical artists spawn out of indie game development, right? You could argue that a indie dev who is a one-person or two-person team are all technical artists, right? They're not necessarily just fitting in the engineer or designer or artist role. And on the other hand, I wish there was more of a structure in the way that, you know, the career transition is handled from being a junior tech artist, if you will, which I would argue that doesn't exist, but from being a more inexperienced developer to being a more experienced developer, and what those steps mean, right? Because in other disciplines like game design or software engineering, it's easier, even though you argue that, you know, that's also very difficult, but there's at least more tangible steps of industry experience and maturity. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I would agree. I think there's like studios should may some studios actually don't like specialty because it's harder to get I think they want somebody they always want to cut as much of the budget or make their budget, so if they can get like one person who can wear many hats, that's always preferable. Coming from the tech art side, I think that's something that Raz has mentioned earlier about having a curiosity. So that's kind of working against this sort of specialization, because maybe one point in your career, you really like graphics. And then you may decide that, oh, I've gone as far as I can, or like there's no more things for me to learn at the moment in this area. And so now I want to move into physics and simulation. So I think that curiosity is what's keeping technical artists from like just being specialized in one specific area. Although, you know, it's totally cool and possible for somebody to just only want to work in animation or only want to work in lighting. But I feel like they're always going to have that curiosity and that drive to learn and still at least read about other topics and read about other areas.
Right.
Sure. I do have a question for you.
Oh, that's not how the show works.
No. Well, I'd love to know what your thoughts are on tech art and artists, content creators becoming more technical, because then you posed the question to tech artists, whether we should feel threatened or whether we feel threatened. Mm-hmm. As an engineer, do you feel like your territory is being encroached on?
No, I agree with you guys in your response and kind of how you feel about the artist to the tech artist. I feel like the same is the case with engineering and technical art. The thing is, to Roz's point, to I guess both your points about how they're being so much on the table, so much food in the kitchen, I guess, that there's like so many, we're not operating out of scarcity is kind of what I'm saying is there's just so much to do. There's so many, there's like, you know, like I said, the cloud server engineers, backend engineers, you know, networking engineers. There's just like so many things to kind of dig into, even in just the realm of game development. If we're looking at film, if we're looking at industrial, automotive, there's just so much to learn and to do as an engineer, as a tech artist, I think, and even as an artist that, you know, it's kind of hard to feel that you're at a disadvantage by, you know, not knowing even more, I guess, or doing more. Not sure if that answered your question.
It does, right on. Although, okay. Are you just saying that because you have technical on your show?
Because I have technical. No comment. Okay. But quick question. I kind of want to touch back on what Roz was talking about arguing that there's no quote unquote junior technical artist. Which my question is, how would you two, both of you, how do you determine a good technical artist from a bad technical artist? Like, what makes a senior, quote unquote, senior technical artist a senior technical artist outside of, or better question, sorry. How do you tell a good technical artist?
I would say that definitely if you don't have communication skills, if you have trouble articulating a solution, I think that should be one of the highest sort of soft skills that a technical artist should have. Another would be that lack of learning or that lack of
curiosity,
desire to learn new tools or be comfortable with learning new tools. I think if you're scared by that, that's definitely a sign of you probably not being in tech art.
I would add that also for me, for example, for the longest time, and I think this is a sign of some maturity in technical art. I remember for me, for the longest time, it was very difficult to not jump to solutions. So I think one of the most important roles that a technical artist encounters, maybe even on a daily, is the, you know, how to solve a problem, a specific problem. Usually it comes from an artist or an engineer or a product manager asking for a certain thing. And a lot of the times, most people would jump to suggesting solutions. But I think what a technical artist does best, and this is usually a sign of experience, is to take a step back and first understand the problem. Because a lot of the times, the people who are trying to ask the question also have a solution in mind and want to find out, you know, how do I do this? How do I make this texture smaller, right? And what the technical artist needs to do is understand, why do you want to make this texture smaller?
Right.
Right. Because if you start pulling at that thread, you might find out that the reason they want to do this is because they have this false understanding or wrong understanding of this other system. And in actuality, that's not where you need to focus your time and effort. You need to be looking at a different place. So for me personally, that was a challenge for a very long time to not jump to, hey, you know, I want to help. I want to do this because this is what you asked for. But instead, understand why you asked for that.
Exactly. And it's kind of funny. I was actually a couple weeks ago, I was on YouTube watching that one series by Riot. It's I think it's called Just Say You Want to Make Games. And there was one on technical artists. And it was like one of the key questions a technical artist should ask is, you know, what are you trying to do? And that's kind of what you were just explaining. It's like being able to ask that question is like a key staple question for a technical artist to ask anybody that they come in contact with and they're trying to, you know, get something to do or something changed.
Yeah, I would add to that because that's something when I started out making tools for artists, I kind of fell into the mistake of just like listening to what the artist wants and then making the tool exactly as they specified. And then like later on down the line, they're like, oh, actually, we also need this to do this. And then you would expand the tool and make it do this. And sooner than later, you were just making this like monstrosity of a tool with all of these like add-ons. And you realized that this was all trying to, this was all to solve something that was further upstream, where if you could just solve that problem, then all these other things that came downstream would have disappeared.
Right. Good point. And you guys are all touching on things that is kind of alluding to some of one of the sections I kind of wanted to talk about, which was, you know, what is in a technical artist toolbox? So, you know, I think Andrea actually touched on a lot of these already that she recommended, I guess, was communication has to be a big piece of, or be a big part of a technical artist toolbox. That curiosity that both of you touched on. Is there anything else, even outside of soft skills, like actual hardware or software that you use on a daily basis that's like, this is part of the toolbox that you kind of have to have or you need to be excited about, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I would not necessarily put any of the things that I'm about to list as that you must have.
Right.
But I think you know, you can try to check off a bingo of some array of these, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there are things like, you know, a passion for education, because a lot of times you need to teach people about a variety of things. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you teach an engineer about art or an artist about engineering, then, you know, to lead into that, those fundamentals of art and fundamentals of engineering are also great assets. And then a, you know, an understanding of how real, for games specifically, how real-time engines work. A lot of them work in similar ways. So understanding, you know, how graphics cards works and how a CPU works and just a basic understanding of those hardware pieces then allows you to take advantage of the software that build upon it. Yeah, it's just a few things.
Definitely a familiarity with the art pipeline, and that pipeline may like vary in detail from project to project, but a lot of times it's just, you know, somebody makes something in either a 2D or 3D package, either so like an Adobe product or an Autodesk product, and they need to get that exported into some format that the game engine can read, and then that needs to be imported into the game, and then you need to organize the assets in a specific way. So understanding in general that like workflow, and then maybe more popular pipelines, so you know, like the Maya to FBX to Unity pipeline, or if you are an animation, like exporting out something to Havok and then getting like the mesh and the skeleton in one asset and animation clips in another asset. Like you don't have to know every single piece of that and all of the details, but just understanding some of the steps and then some of the problem areas.
Gotcha. Cool. That sounds good. So I just kind of, one thing I noticed when you were saying, Roz, about the passion for education, I just immediately translated that to patience, I guess. Is that kind of what you're going for? Is like, you just need to have a lot of patience as you're explaining things and talking to people?
That's definitely a fair assumption. Right. yeah, because I think you need to be able to translate knowledge to different levels of understanding. Mm. You know, without you know, putting too much pressure on a certain group, I think sometimes you need to have, as a technical artist, you need to have an understanding of the pipeline at different levels in terms of how complex the explanation needs to be. I don't know if that makes sense, but for example, you know, a 2D artist that integrates their own content into an engine, like let's say they're making UI, right, the user interface of the game, and they're doing all of that themselves, from drawing it on paper or whatnot and scanning it and drawing on top of it in Photoshop and painting it, or if they do the whole thing in Photoshop, and then export that in a image format, and then open that and import it in the engine, and then use that in a UI paradigm in some engine to display it at runtime. Helping that artist understand what happens through each one of those steps. In order to do that, you need to be able to understand what actually happens there. And then you need to be able to figure out a way to explain that to someone who may have no interest in knowing why they need to do it like that, or why they should do it like that, if that makes sense.
Right, it does. And I think we've kind of talked about quote unquote pipelines. I'm not sure, and Andrea kind of explained it, and I just kind of want to get a holistic view of what you both mean when you say a pipeline or the art pipeline. We're not talking about Jenkins build pipelines, right? We're talking about something completely different. Can you guys explain what a pipeline is, how a technical artist needs to understand it, I guess, and what about that needs to get translated to teams and to different people across a team?
So one, there are many different pipelines, but most all of them are just pathways for a particular type of content to get from its creator, the source, to whatever the user is going to see. And that includes like all of the conversion and all of the different organizational part aspect of it. So like checking it into source control, naming conventions, automation processes. So that's what I would think of as a pipeline.
Right. Cool. I don't know if you wanted to expand on that at all, Roz, or.
Yeah, I guess for games, the content pipeline, or just the pipeline, is anything that is not the runtime code. I think everything else I categorize as pipeline. So for the art asset specifically, you know, from the moment they start off as a idea on a designer's paper until they run in the game, that's the pipeline. How does it get from that point, the point A to point B?
Right. Is there a right or wrong pipeline for a product?
Yes. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's just more like efficiency. So okay. Not maybe not right or wrong, but like time saving aspect.
Interesting. Cool. Follow-up question. If as a technical artist, you're on a you are hired into a new company, a new studio, and you see their pipeline and it works, quote unquote, like, how do you manage like jumping into another technical artist's pipeline?
I think Raz has a recent experience in this.
Well, I think first, you know, your first goal is to understand the type of content that is getting created. That's your first goal. And then observe how that content is made. So, you know, all of this takes some time. And then ideally, you would find, this sounds a bit dirty, but ideally you would find flaws in the way that content gets created and pipelined, if you will, into the engine. So then that's where you focus on. And I'd say that where technical artists should focus their time is usually driven by the type of content that gets made, right? Because if it's and I'll give you a specific example. If you have a 2D game that's primarily UI and sprites, you know, 2D images, and then it has the occasional 3D character that does a little dance, then the focus, even though you're producing a 3D game and you have 3D content in it, most often than not, most artists are producing the 2D content. So then all the optimization, all your efforts should go into making sure that part of the pipeline is as smooth as possible. So that, you know, that could mean anything from making sure those textures are as high quality as possible, but also as compressed as possible, as tiny and, you know, fast to download for the users. But then also that creating those textures, you know, that takes the smallest amount of time that it can, because that in the end helps the studio by you know, saving money that can be spent in producing more content.
Right. So quick question, almost just a segue, or not segue, but kind of jumping off what you're just talking about. But would you say that the main goal for technical artists is to find pain points for both artists and engineers, or even you could just say the studio at whole for a particular product? Is it just finding the pain points in a pipeline and then addressing those pain points?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think the majority of your time is going to be doing that. Kind of just adding to what Raz has said, I think sometimes too, if you are jumping into another artist or another studio's pipeline, sometimes you have to eat a little humble pie where you think you know what's best for that group of artists or that studio. But if you find that no matter how much you advocate a particular workflow, if they're not going to do it, then you have to find either you have to find other ways to educate them, or you have to come up with another pathway that you know will be ingestible. And that's sometimes you just have to compromise, or you have to kind of switch gears or switch your thinking.
Right.
And, yeah, going back to your question, Obina, I think unfortunately most of the time, so you presented a scenario where you're a new technical artist in a studio, and you know, how do you get started? How do you find the flaws and try to improve that pipeline? But unfortunately, most of technical art, in my opinion, is very reactive. Ideally, technical art would be this discipline where you plan and create a system and a pipeline for things to flow smoothly. But the reality of game productions especially are that a lot of a technical artist's work is done reactive to, that we have a choking point in the pipeline because we're not producing enough content for our consumers to, to look at. And how do you improve that, right? And then it's the next thing and the next thing. And it's usually, like I said, a reactive process to game development. And not very often it's a, let's sit down and properly plan a pipeline for the type of content we're making, because sometimes you don't know the type of content you're going to be making because the game will change.
Right. And I think, yeah, you're right. And I think that is game development. Game development is way, I think, extremely fluid for people, for that kind of planned, methodical plan to be in place. Maybe more so for other industries, it might be more efficient and more productive, but definitely game development.
Yeah, I'd say unless you're on a franchise title, like if you're making the 500 millionth Madden, you kind of know what to expect.
And that's probably in VR and I don't know what it is. But actually, I had a quick question, and we're actually running low on time, but I had a question related to the pain point issue. But we kind of mentioned both pain points and then efficiency. So I'm curious, and this might be splitting hairs, but is the focus, should the priority be addressing pain points for technical artists or addressing efficiency? So like there might be an issue in the pipeline that could be more efficient, maybe save, 10 minutes of iteration time, versus there's a series of dialogue boxes that an artist has to keep pressing confirm on. That's a huge pain point for, the 15 artists you have. Which is the priority as a technical artist? How do you decide?
That's tough.
Well, it is tough specifically because, in the end, you have to face the reality of the fact that each game studio is a business, right? And a business has certain financial obligations, if you will. So then a lot of the times the decision of what's a pain point and what's a improvement or
inefficiency, I guess.
Inefficiency, yeah. So what's a pain point versus what's an inefficiency is usually dictated by the product. Right. So then, the design of the game or the needs of the game or the needs of the product decide what you focus on first. And if it's something that impacts users directly, and by users, I mean the consumer, usually you focus on that first and then the internal pain points. later if possible.
Right. Yeah, hopefully they coincide where right. the pain point is because it's so inefficient.
Right, for sure. Cool. So we kind of touched on the career growth. So I think we could table that discussion. What I kind of want to get from both of you, and I kind of like to do this with all of my interviewees as we wrap things up, is if you know you had any last minute parting advice or a story that you love to tell because you love technical art so much that that's a story that just drives you. Either one, if you have like parting advice or a story that you want to tell, I'd love to hear it. I'm sure our listeners would love to hear it.
Don't go to a crappy art school.
I almost want to know what school you went to, but not on air. So I don't want to like bash them on air.
Yeah. I think you would, most people who want to get in the game industry kind of know what to
Trump
avoid.
University?
I think it would be along those lines.
Just kidding. Sorry, that was political. I might get in trouble for that.
I would say that you should, for tech art, you should not try to put up definitive check boxes, although there are check boxes, but I think a lot of tech art is kind of carving your own path and carving your own roles and responsibilities. So being very proactive in your career, and also being willing to stand up for your decisions. So I guess an anecdotal thing would be I was at a studio where there was confusion on exactly what a tech artist does, and there was a bottleneck in this prototyping phase of the product, and a lot of it came from not having the engineering resources that we needed. And so the misconception was that it was tech art that was the bottleneck, and being able to prove out the tech art role in the pipeline, and then standing by your technical decisions objectively, and not getting passionate or angry about it. So educating people on what the tech artist role is and how I think you're always doing that throughout your tech art career. So, be prepared to do that.
Nice.
Yeah. I'd add that, don't try to tell yourself, no to, trying a new discipline or something that seems foreign and that you think you don't like, until you tried it, because you might discover that you have a passion for more than one thing.
Cool. Sweet. Well, thanks again, Roz and Andrea, for joining us on the show. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. It was really good. A lot of good information about technical art. You two are I take that back. You're not the very first technical artist we've had on the show, but this is the very first show we've had about technical art. So thank you for blessing us with that.
You're welcome. Well, I am looking forward to more technical artists on your show.
For sure. We should definitely bring you guys back.
It doesn't have to be us, so you could have other folks. There are other technical artists.
But you're the only ones I know.
Only two.
I'm just kidding. All right. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
And that's a wrap. Another great interview. I'm sure you guys enjoyed it like you always, always do. Again, that was Andrea Bobic and Roz von Luda, two esteemed technical artists who have been in the game industry for quite a long time. So I'm so glad they were able to join us and drop some knowledge on technical art. Anyway, if you like what we're doing here, you like the show, like what we're putting out, and want to continue this, the good vibes, you can always join us on our Facebook group, which is called The Debug Lounge. Just go to facebook.com and search for The Debug Lounge. If you want to connect with us another way, you can always go join us on our Discord, and that link is on our website, which is thedebuglog.com. If you want to contribute, if you want to help pay for Ryan's alcohol consumption, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, keep the servers going, et cetera, you can always donate to us on patreon.com/thedebuglog. Anyway, if you want to connect personally with me, intimately with me, you can always find me on Twitter or the Instagrams at OBeans, that's O with an H, Beans with a Z. Anyway, it has been real. It has been real. So peace out. Enjoy your week. I love you. Sorta. Not really.